And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Dave, we are living in a bizarro world because the Republicans are campaigning for the presidency on a platform that says crime is rising. In fact, crime is falling. The economy is terrible. In fact, unemployment is down. Job creation is up. Profits are up. The stock market is going to hell in a handbasket. The stock market is at an all-time high. And nearly 60-some-odd percent of the American people believe what the Republicans are saying. How can that be?
Well, first of all, it's where they get their news. And their news is willingly complicit in this. Although the macro that you cited is correct, the micro, what people are experiencing individually in terms of food prices in particular, gasoline prices, which have started to drop and are actually less than they were last year, but people just aren't feeling it, and perception becomes reality.
But it's been like that for the whole of Biden's 3 years. Things have been getting better. The Republicans keep saying they're terrible and they're getting worse. And people believe it. It's not like this just started, right?
Well, it's not just Republicans. Their chief cheerleader, Donald J. Trump, has been portraying America as a dystopian society now since the inception of his campaign. And part of that is the reason for that is that he says that he and only he can be the savior of America. It's the strong man theory that you must have chaos out there so the strong man can say that he can quell the chaos. And that's been going on. And don't forget, he's been repeating this.
Right, but what he says is not unique. That is what fascists say all the time. That's their standard pitch.
That is correct.
And you've been reading Ruth Bungiat. She's been writing about this. You've been telling us about this. So it's, I mean, in other words, academicians have written about this, and they've had plenty of time to publish books about it, whereas the politicians are supposed to be doing it minute to minute. I don't see any kind of an effective counter. I don't see any kind of counter. Never mind effective or not effective. I don't see any counter to this Republican line, this fascist line.
Well, they don't get it because they've been steeped in this tradition of bipartisanship and the old way of doing things, and they don't realize that there's been a transition. Now, on the...
Wait a minute. You live in Scranton. It is not the cosmopolitan center of the universe. You realize there's been a transition. How come people in Washington and New York don't?
Because they've been invested in the other way of things. You have that whole class of political advisors and pundits and what have you. And... There's been a sea change, and they just can't either recognize it or can't cope with it. By the way, on my way over to England, I started reading another book, not just Ruth Bungiat, but Rachel Bitticoffer's book about Hit 'Em Where It Hurts. And she's really very plain and explicit about this. She explains it to a T. She said, You can't do this with the old way. You've got to fight fire with fire, and you've got to call them out constantly, and you can't worry about stepping on toes or of your base. You've got to show that you're you're willing to, like she says, hit them where it hurts. Punch back and punch back twice as hard.
It seems like the Biden campaign has settled on a strategy which is not a strategy of getting out the base, but is a strategy of appealing to the 3 or 4% of people who are undecided and imagining that the base will come out to vote anyway, because what else have they got to do? So you got to concentrate on the undecideds, which is another way of this bipartisanship policy. I think that that's absolutely a loser, because supposing they get this 3 or 4% and 5 or 8% of the 81 million who voted for him last time don't come to vote.
That's the thing. They're surrendering part of their base in order to try to pick up the few of the swing voters. And that's, you know, the people have been yelling now for a long time. Hey, you got to play to your base. We don't see it. There's signs everywhere that Hispanics and African Americans have been going over to the Trump side, or have been saying that they're not going to vote, that they don't see a difference between Biden and Trump. Of course, that's given rise to the Robert Kennedy hopes, but I think he's going to, and he has been fizzling, and he hasn't gotten on enough ballots really to affect a lot of states, but he could affect one or two states, and that's a problem on that. By the way, I saw Jill Stein this week named her vice presidential running mate. Or she didn't name it. She said that she was considering the mayor of, was it Detroit or one of the towns in Michigan?
I think Dearborn.
Dearborn, that's it. The mayor of Dearborn. In order, you know, let's face it, she's there trying to do the Russians' bidding and to undo Biden. She wants Biden to lose Michigan. I mean, that's the only reason you do this. She knows she has no chance of winning Michigan, and she has no chance of winning the presidency. She created a problem for Hillary, and she's creating a problem for Biden.
She may be, but Biden's creating the problem for Biden, in my view. I think, for example, the executive order that he issued at the beginning of the week, restricting immigration, restricting asylum, not restricting immigration, but restricting asylum. By the way, it's a policy which is going to get struck down because it's against American law.
It didn't work before.
It didn't work before. That's right. It was struck down the last time it was tried. It's illegal. But the point is, if the discussion is about how best to restrict asylum, then you're arguing on Donald Trump's terms. Isn't the whole point of politics to make sure that the other guy fights on your terms?
Of course. Of course. And, of course, the Republicans found this out in the primary. They wanted to be Donald Trump without Donald Trump light or without the baggage. I mean, Ron DeSantis got nowhere on that theory.
That's right.
By the time that the only one that was fighting it was Chris Christie, and he didn't have a chance. Nikki Haley came late to the party on fighting it. And it didn't work for her either. You don't want to be in their ballpark. You want them to be in your ballpark.
Right. But by doing this, if that's really the issue that's so important in a lot of people's minds, or at least 30% of the voters' minds, it's got the plurality. Then if you accede to the frames of reference that the right wing, that the fascists, that the anti-immigrant people propose, in effect, you're moving the entire political discussion, not the discussion only about asylum, but the discussion about everything in a rightward direction.
This is nothing new. This has happened for decades with the Democrats. They've had a couple of times when they've changed, I think. Well, you could argue maybe Bill Clinton didn't, but he had a different way of framing things.
He had a different way of framing things, but NAFTA didn't help. In fact, NAFTA promoted the emigration of 3 million Mexican farmers who got dispossessed of their land because they couldn't compete with the United States commercial farms.
Well, Clinton got elected twice.
He did. NAFTA did. But they didn't figure out a way to handle what they caused, namely the expropriation of all these Mexican farmers. So if the effect of the policy is to make sure that your party can't ever win another election, but you can, why is that a good policy?
Well, that's the thing. You've got to think in broader terms.
Yeah.
You've got to think in broader terms. By the way, Mexico just had its election. We're here in England, where there's going to be an election on July 4th. You know, politicians do dumb things at times. We just saw one here in England where the sitting prime minister had the world stage at his fingertips in the D-Day commemoration. And he, in the midst of this, decided to leave some of the events in order to go back home in order to do some political matters.
Commercial. He went to record a commercial.
He couldn't wait 2 days to do this.
It's amazing. It's amazing.
Political stupidity.
Well, maybe World War II is no longer significant in English politics, although I don't believe that.
Well, from what I've seen on the television over here, it certainly is. It certainly is in France. But in America, you know, we have that phenomenon. Biden was here, and you have the Republican standard bearer who's denigrated the military and military personnel at every opportunity. He's called them losers. He's called them suckers. He said, "What was in it for them? Why did they do this?" He wouldn't pose with wounded because it didn't look good for him. All of these.
I don't actually understand why he thinks it wouldn't look good for an American president to pose with wounded American soldiers. Why is that? Why did he get away with that? Why was that?
You know, he's visual, and he only wants, when he's there, he only wants pretty things or things that look good. And he doesn't think that being with soldiers who are injured or bandaged up looks good in the whole picture. He doesn't understand anything else. It's all about him. You heard that quote. He was on television, and they asked him about his relationship with God. And he talked nothing about God. He only talked about himself. How the evangelicals...
Well, he is God.
Well, that's part of what his cult believes. They believe he's been sent here by God as their standard bearer. And if that's what they believe, you're not going to break through that part of the mentality. And he understands that. So he's banking on them and banking that he can, you know, in a base election, he can get more of them than Biden can on his base.
So it's interesting. Trump is counting on a base election. Biden is counting on a mobilized, undecided election. Very different strategy. If I was a betting man, I'd bet on Trump.
Well, that's what a lot of people have been doing. And that's why he's been leading in the polls. The stumbling block he ran into this week was the last week was the conviction, which changed the dialogue, at least for a bit. And the Biden people, the Lincoln Project people, are trying to capitalize on that. The Republicans haven't figured out yet how to spin their support for a convicted felon. And at least in that part, the Biden people are playing offense. He's talking about that as much as possible, using the words convicted felon. And but still, this election's very...
Well, the Republicans, I think, are answering it very cleverly. They're saying, there's no crime here.
Right.
There's no crime here. So he's convicted. The conviction is a fraud. He was convicted by people who are dishonest for doing what's not a crime.
that's always there.
Well, imagine if the Biden people did the same, they used the same approach on everything he says. It would be a completely different campaign.
Yeah. The problem is that the Biden people are addicted to the truth. Again, it's the bizarro world. It's the bizarro world. And we still have all of those surrogates for Trump auditioning for vice presidency. We see a J.D. Vance was on TV and was saying something about or criticizing the Biden people for doing this. And the reporter said, well, he is a convicted felon, after all. They just pretend that it really isn't there. We had another one of the those who's trying out, who isn't going to be the running mate, by the way, that Byron Donalds from.
How can any Republican who lives in Florida be the running mate of the candidate for president who also lives in Florida? Doesn't the Constitution say the two can't come from the same state?
It does, and that was the dilemma that George W. Bush had when he picked Dick Cheney. But Dick Cheney changed the mix by moving to Wyoming.
But neither Byron Donald nor Marco Rubio can move out of Florida because they're elected officials.
Well, it hasn't stopped other elected officials from. Josh Hawley doesn't live in Missouri anymore. Tommy Tuberville doesn't live in Atlanta, in Alabama anymore. He lives in Florida. And of course, in our state,
McCormick doesn't live in Pennsylvania.
He lives in Connecticut.
Right.
Yeah. So we've had all of those things. By the way, though, we really got to mention, we talk about bizarro world. Byron Donalds came out and said that blacks had a better under Jim Crow.
Well, that goes along with DeSantis. Didn't DeSantis say that slaves learned things that, not Dylan DeSantis, his educational group came out and said that slaves learned things that benefited them individually. That was one of the good points of slavery, right?
Yeah.
So yeah. That's it. So now Donald follows up and saying, and it was good in lynching days too.
He said they voted more conservatively, and of course, he immediately got slammed by people in pointing out that they
didn't vote.
But this is the insanity and betting on the ignorance of the American public, betting on the fact if you say something and you say it with enough positive voice and you repeat it, that people are going to believe it.
But that's the whole point. The American public is not so ignorant. There are the people who are hoodwinked by the MAGA fascists. They may be ignorant, many of them, but they're a minority. At best, that group is about, 18% of the population, 15 to 18% of the population. That leaves, 80-some-odd percent of the population that knows better.
Yeah.
But they got to be mobilized.
Yeah. Now, it may not affect the presidential, but the down ballots, the Republicans keep trying to lose things. They came out this week. There was a proposed bill to protect the rights of people to purchase and use contraceptives, and the Republicans voted against it.
And I didn't see any howls really from the Democrats attacking them for that. They put up the vote, but they didn't follow up that vote.
They didn't follow up. That they need to do that. In the party of law and order. We had two of the police officers who were at the Capitol on January 6th appeared in the Pennsylvania state legislature, and the Republicans walked out on them. And not only walked out on them, they jeered them.
These guys were, are they really policemen? I mean, one guy is an African American, another guy was Hispanic. Are these really policemen?
Well, they were that day, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, that's true. It's true. And where was the condemnation for that? Where was the... Why weren't people from all over the country yelling about this as on the basically treachery by the Pennsylvania Republican Party?
Yeah. It's you know, it's so outlandish as to what they did that it's that the Democrats just don't know how to. And it's not just Democrats. Getting back to the political class, they don't know how to deal with things that are that abnormal and that bizarro.
Well, in history, we see that this happened in Germany when the Nazis rose. There were plenty of conservatives who thought that they could control the Nazis, right?
Right.
And they financed them.
Right. Things looked really good in 1935. They didn't look very good for them in 1945.
No, that's right.
But again, those are people that don't look more for long term. We have plenty of those in the United States, the ones that work from quarter to quarter or year to year rather than...
those are called corporate executives.
Yes. We've been making more and more money from their... skimming more off the top. The executive class rather than the workers. There's a couple of other bizarro things this week. We had Judge Cannon down in Florida, who's been doing her darndest to help Donald Trump, and she decided that there weren't enough issues or motions in front of us. She was going to create more chaos and asked that the attorneys brief the idea as to whether or not the special counsel really was properly constituted and therefore could even bring a case. Even though this has been adjudicated elsewhere, this argument.
And that question hasn't arisen in this case.
Right. I mean, it wasn't a case in... It wasn't something that was in front of her.
Right.
She just decided to add something to it as an excuse to prolong matters.
And then to be able to say there's a lot of thorny issues in front of me that have to be decided. But this is one thorny issue that's not thorny and wasn't in front of her.
Right. And one wonders what Jack Smith's next move is, whether he's just going to go to the circuit court and say, enough is enough. You've got to take this lady and
send her to law school.
I'm not sure what law school she went to take her off the case. Meanwhile, the Supreme Court continues to dawdle on the immunity case that they shouldn't have taken in the first place, but they still haven't come down with an opinion, and they're running it for the last couple weeks of court. There's some other big decisions out there, but this one...
So what happens if they don't decide it? The court adjourns.
No, they're going to decide it.
How do you know?
Well, I think that's pretty certain. Now, although they do have an out, they could say, we could set this over for re-argument on the next term. We have another issue, pull a Judge Cannon and do that. If they do, it'd be pretty obvious as to what they're doing. But... obviously.
Well, they don't care about obvious. Look at Clarence Thomas. Who could be more obvious than Clarence Thomas or Judge Alito?
Right. I mean, those are things that we've been seeing.
I don't know if, because you've been traveling, that you notice Clarence Thomas's latest admissions of corruption.
Yeah. Well, we knew about these because of ProPublica, but he hadn't... He hadn't changed his statements that he's forced to make on an annual basis. He hadn't corrected them from going years back, and finally this week he did correct it, which now officially acknowledges what ProPublica said, that he has accepted gifts worth, I guess, millions of dollars from donors, particularly this Harlan Crow.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And, but he, you know, he has no intention of resigning, and the other justices have no intention of criticizing him, which should be done. And you know, go back to a couple weeks ago when Chief Justice Roberts told the Senate Judiciary Committee, I'm not going to, you know, come in front of you and talk to you about this. This is our purview. The court will take care of itself. Of course, it isn't taking care of itself.
Or it is.
Well, yeah, I guess in one way, yeah, they are taking care of it.
Yeah, exactly. Which is the point. So why aren't there a group of Democrats who are introducing a bill to expand the court? Or something? Why let these six people have a stranglehold?
There should be demonstrations outside the court every day.
Yeah. It's not hard to organize a demonstration. There's people ready to demonstrate.
Right. The Republicans are pro-lifers. Demonstrate in front of abortion clinics every day. This should be something, and they just need a good PR person to be able to keep bringing this out there.
But it's not the strategy of the leadership of the Democratic Party. Their strategy is don't make waves, bipartisanship, work together. I don't know what country they think they're living in. Who are they going to be bipartisan with? Marjorie Taylor Greene? Jim Jordan? I just don't understand it.
Well, they've gotten a few things, but it's few and far between. And don't forget, in September, they've got another vote coming up about funding the government.
Yeah, that's happening. That's true. But you saw what Mike Johnson just did the other day. He appointed Scott Perry and the drug doctor from Texas, who used to be Donald Trump's doctor, to the Intelligence Committee. Jackson, right. To the Intelligence Committee. That's an important committee handling the most significant secrets that the government has. Scott Perry's a crook, and the other guy is a drug peddler, a drug addict. And not a drug addict, but a drug dealer. Everybody knows it.
Well, Scott Perry is one of those that asked Trump for a pardon before Trump left.
That's right.
Now, I've seen some recent polling that it's basically a statistical tie down in that race. If his opponent can't capitalize on some of these things. By the way, Johnson did this because Donald Trump told him to do it.
Well, of course. Of course. And if the Democratic Campaign Committee doesn't want to respond, they are derelict in their duty.
Yeah, I mean, there's plenty of fodder there for TV stations in that part of the state to be working on this.
All right. How much longer are you going to be away?
I'll be back in Pennsylvania midweek.
All right. You'll have time to catch up. Things are going to be happening. They might not cover it in England.
How about Iceland? We came through Iceland.
They might cover it in Iceland. Who knows? Anyway, I'll see you next week.
We'll see you next week.
You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place.